one of my favorite musicians, Sonny Stitt, with Blue Devil Blues. Stitt is on both alto and tenor sax, Louis Levy on piano, Leroy Vinegar on bass, and Mel Lewis on drums. This was recorded in 1959 and appears on Stitt's album, Sonny Stitt Blows the Blues. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It's Free Your Mind Friday. You know, with this current situation that the nation is dealing with, the possible impeachment of President Trump, lots and lots of experts are telling us every day, for most of the day, what they're thinking. I'm interested in what you're thinking. And that's what we do on Free Your Mind Fridays. It's an open forum for the expression of your views, your opinions, your ideas. And you call 888-874-4888. The entire program is given to what you are thinking. You are the experts. Of course, we talk to each other every day, but on Friday, we make it a point to set it aside so that you can express with a little bit more latitude and time your opinions, so you get your point across as fully as possible. Again, 888-874-4888. Let us hear what you're thinking, what concerns you, and be as succinct as you possibly can so that as many people could get in as possible. All right. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Eutrice.
Hey, wonderful Harvey. What's going on?
Well, I'd like to talk about the severe drought in South Africa. And the South African government is promoting the use of more coal plants to generate electricity. And we know that burning coal produces vast amounts of carbon dioxide, as well as other greenhouse gases that overheat our atmosphere, causing climate destabilization that change weather patterns and increase the chance of drought. Like here in California, where the lack of rainfall has given rise to out-of-control wildfires. And South Africa, like California, has an abundance of sunshine. And the South African government should move towards renewable energy as fast as possible, because once manufactured and installed, solar panels use no water and have no moving parts. They make no noise. They cause no chemical reactions, no radioactive waste or greenhouse gas emissions, and are virtually maintenance-free over their 20 to 30-year warranted lifetime. At the same time, coal power plants use vast amounts of water to boil it and turn it to steam and to power the generator. So if they cut out their coal plants, they would have more water than they have now. But I say that one of the solutions to their problem is what they call a technology called atmospheric water generators, and you can Google that, atmospheric water generators. They condense water out of the atmosphere for daily use, because it's an open cycle technology, meaning that the water is recycled back into the atmosphere. You collect it out of the atmosphere, and you drink it or use it for irrigation, use it for cooking, and so on and so forth. And so the water goes back into the atmosphere. It's like having your own private cloud. And there's both large-scale utility atmospheric water generators that pull thousands of gallons of water out of the atmosphere every day. And they can be powered by solar panels. And there's also what I would call small residential units. Like, for instance, you can have you know, in offices, you have like the water cooler. Well, it's like a water cooler, but without the water, without the gallon of water. It just pulls. What it is that, think of a box where there's a fan at one end. It pulls air into the box, and inside the box, there's condensers. You know, like when you put a pitcher of lemonade out on a hot day, the cool lemonade causes water to condense on the outside of the pitcher. And that's basically what water harvesting is. You pull the water out of the air by creating a cooler surface than the atmosphere is, and water condenses out. There's also a technology called thermoelectric devices, thermoelectric, thermoelectric devices that are initially used to cool electronics. They put, because when electronics get too hot, they don't work as well, so they put thermoelectric panels up against electronic devices, and it pumps the heat from one side of the panel to the other. It's solid state. Well, it turns out that they can have thermoelectric devices inside of water harvesting machines that, with no noise, this is all solid state, so you can use, like, you take a box, for instance, you cover it with solar panels, and you put thermoelectric devices inside the box, plus a little fan. It pulls the air through the box, and the water condenses onto the cool side of the thermoelectric device, and that water is collected. So you can have small, like you can have solar panels on the roof of a house and thermoelectric devices inside the house that collect water, and then the water could be put through a purifier or remineralized and is good for drinking or cooking. So on a large scale as well as a small scale, we can tap into the atmosphere. It would be like owning your own private cloud and pull water out of the atmosphere, drink it, and then it's rejoined back into the environment. And so this could be one way for Africa to get past its severe drought. And the drought is also leading to crop loss, so a lot of people are going to go hungry as well as be thirsty. And I think that that Americans of African descent could actually play a major role in helping organize a way for South Africa to, in a sense, get their water back, using both renewable energy and water harvesting devices like thermoelectric devices, and on both a utility and residential scale. And so that's a suggestion that I have today.
Thank you. Worth considering. Thank you so much. Gene from Maryland, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Utrice, and happy Friday.
Hello.
To you.
Thank you.
Yes. So two quick points for you. Number one, I'd just like to say to Harvey that I just got my 19 solar panels installed on the top of my house, and I'm looking forward to that experience. So generally what he calls in with is some good stuff, and I'm definitely in that boat pulling an oar as well.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. Second issue, we spend a lot of time reading, reviewing, discussing so much stuff about the president and what's going on in those spaces. And something different has occurred to me, and I wanted to bounce this off of you today on Friday.
Okay.
Given that the president has had significant trouble over the last 3 years with staffing, there are quite a few appointed and even a couple of cabinet-level positions which have remained empty since he took office. There have been a number of people who have been fired. There have been a number more who have simply left and not been replaced. I wonder, as we approach the 2020 election for president, if he is reelected, could he actually govern effectively without a full staff?
Well, obviously you missed my rant yesterday, in which I described this as a deliberate plan. It's not so much that a lot of these positions have gone unfilled. It is the design of the plan. Because people who have left have not been replaced. That is a plan, so that the president is able to appoint acting. There are a lot of acting people heading up agencies under Trump, which means they deliberately have no power. They just have no power to do anything except just be a plug in, you know, until a permanent person is put in place, and that will not happen. That is not going to happen. Why? I went in at length about this yesterday. It was part of the theory that I had proffered that without us really knowing, my thing is that the government has been hijacked. And a lot of these agencies that are without a person at the top implementing policy and procedures and so forth, it leaves wide open the ability of the president to just put people in place for the time being. They're placeholders, but the money allotted to the agency is still in play. The people who are temporary, they're pure figureheads, but I believe that there's a plan. This is not accidental, because you have all these agencies that do not have someone heading them up. With them being acting heads of the agency, they can't make policy. They have no say, really, in how the agency's funds are allotted. I was specific in citing the example of Puerto Rico. The Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, which is the charge of Dr. Carson. Well, we know that after Hurricane Maria, hundreds of millions of dollars were allocated for the massive repairs that have to be done. The money was allocated, it passed, and it just has not shown up in Puerto Rico. That's a perfect example. You have someone in place, but he's not making policy. He can't make policy. He's not allowed to make policy. And the chief policy issue there is managing hundreds of millions of dollars in funds. So all this time, Puerto Rico, since Hurricane Maria, no money, real money, that has already been allocated has not shown up, and nobody knows where it is. So you multiply that by a whole bunch of other agencies, federal agencies, that have only acting directors who can't make any decisions. So my feeling is that there's been a coup without us knowing it. And hundreds, if not billions of dollars are unaccounted for in terms of, you know, they have not been allotted and they've not been animated for what it is that they originally were allocated for. It's a really smart, it's a really nifty maneuver, because it looks like work is going on, but there's no work going on, real work going on. You don't have real people making real decisions. And At the same time, it gives the administration cover because they can say, well, we didn't get these things done because we didn't get somebody in place. Somebody who is going to be in place will have to be vetted. They will have to go through an approval process. Trump is not starting any of that because this, these positions are strictly for his cronies. And there's a lot of money available that Trump can easily put his hand in the till and get millions of dollars allocated to specious projects that we know nothing about. So I think that is worth investigating.
And I agree. I, as you suggest this, you know, one of the things that continues to come to mind, I guess it's about 20 years ago now, when Grover Norquist was known to be a champion of drowning the federal government in a bathtub, or making it small enough to drown in a bathtub. And I think that in some measure, we are seeing that. The residuals of this are what's really scary to me. We have seen a tremendous erosion, not in just the power of the government and what the government does with respect to running the country, but the erosion of just basic civil liberties of people. And I'll leave you with this. I'm a big fan of maps. And one of the things that I like to do is to use Google Earth to just look at different things around the world. And if you go to a place like the state of Oklahoma or western Texas and just zoom down to about 15,000 feet, you can see these dotted grids. And what they are fracking wells, just hundreds and hundreds of square miles of fracking wells. And when you take a look at how fracking wells go in, you have these little small companies that go do a lease deal with the landowner, they pop a well in, and they suck out the gas, and then they go out of business. And there are so many of these wells that it occurs to me that as these people, these little companies, start to go out of business, who's going to pull all that hardware out of the ground? Who's going to clean that up? The EPA has simply allowed the states to manage this issue, and the states are not capable. And so I wonder, what happens to the Ocala Aquifer in northern Texas in the Panhandle that also crosses the border into Oklahoma, where all of this hardware is now in the ground? And what are the people in Dallas going to drink for water?
A very sobering thought. Thanks so much for contributing today. Jay from New York, you're on the air. Hello, Jay, you're on the air. Okay, Ma'at from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, greetings to the beloved family.
Thank you.
I tell you, that was powerful, your monologue yesterday, and I love, you might at some point want to give out that number where you could press 1 and 2 for the last 5 shows, because that brother, I think he really enjoyed it. And the irony is you was talking about the role of this Giuliani, and we know who he was in terms of mocking people around the killings by the police and the riot with the police riot, his participation against David Dinkins, et cetera, et cetera. So we knew what when we hear, oh, the mayor of the town or whatever around September 11th, when we know that he didn't treat that as a criminal scene, you know, and then he grabbed the gold. So we know who he was, but you don't even get a chance. It has to be another program. for the peace around this, what is it, Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman. I mean, you couldn't make this stuff up. He's being paid $500,000 by them. They're being arrested, including conspiracy and defrauding the United States, and on and on. So it's a lot that we don't have. But I want to say something mainly about impeachment, because you brought that up and we've been sort of not really spending too much time. But I'm going to call Al Green's office. I do sometimes write a column, so I'm going to also get in touch with his media liaison person. But when he went a few weeks ago, you were right that he was losing heart, Utrice. He went on, sometimes I see glimpses of Politics Nation with Al Sharpton, and he went on there, and when he mentioned about his being involved in impeachment early on, the only thing he mentioned was obstruction of justice. So we need to contact all these representatives and make the point that with so many impeachable offenses, I mean, you want to, for the future presidencies, you want to make the full record. In fact, Utrice, I know you say you're backing off your email, but I'm wondering, because I could help you to put him on air. Ralph Nader, I heard him when BAI was off the air, and, you know, the National, they were playing him. He had on John Boniface, and they went through at least 20 different, and I mean, what you said yesterday, he put it a certain way, I can't remember, but he actually put that in an impeachment article with John Boniface, who has impeachmentproject.org and Free Speech for the People, and it's wide range. Ralph said bringing the presidency into dispute with foul-mouthed language. They talked about inciting violence and riot, and that should have been the first thing. So we need to contact these representatives, say that since we hear the Republicans saying that the Ukraine incident isn't impeachable, put it all on the board. You know, it needs to be at least 7 instances, especially incitement of violence. I mean, you know, you're forgetting about your whole people of color base.
Well, this was made very clear in Al Green, a congressman from Texas, when he presented his argument for the impeachment of Donald Trump.
Yeah, and also, Utrice, the bigotry.
It is bothersome to me that the Democrats just have not paid any mind to it. He went before his fellow Congress people twice, bringing attention to the connection between Donald Trump and racial violence in this country.
And you choose also bigotry and how that would be connected to making policies. So he broke it down in a couple parts. Yes.
But the thing is, he said it. He presented it. I made it a point that when he was finished, both times, no other member of Congress went up to him and shook his hand or, you know, gave him a pat on the back and said, good job.
Mm-hmm.
And now that they, you know, they're moving swiftly on impeachment, it seems to me, as I remember Al Green's the case that he made, the content is not reflected in the actions of the Congress now, seeking, you know, impeachment of the president. It's as if Al Green never said anything.
And you know, you said that he had lost heart. When he was with Al Sharpton, the main thing that he should have been bringing that up, and he skirted that. So I got the impression that he's been discouraged because he was so known for, you know, connecting open, overt bigotry with connecting to making policy, right? and the incitement of violence, and he just skirted. He just, so we need to contact him. We need to remind him, and we need to have it all laid out. I mean, especially if the senators aren't on board, they can, if they just pick one. Okay, it needs to be all laid out.
Okay, thanks for calling in and contributing today.
We
had lost Jay, but I understand you're back. Are you there, Jay?
Can you hear me, Utrecht?
Yes, I can. So we'll take your call, and then we go to a break and get to other calls as well. So go ahead.
First, I would like to say, I hope at some point in time you could do a whole show with Harvey. I mean, the information that Harvey gives forward on Fridays is something that the country needs to hear in regards to solar and all sorts of other things to preserve our way of life for a longer period of time. It really amazes me to listen to him. And, you know, I really think he needs a show on PRN to put forward, you know, this whole notion on global warming and all of these things that are affecting our children to the future, because this person that we have in office right now just doesn't understand or believe in any of the things that Harvey be talking about. And, you know, he's pushing back and repealing all sorts of things in regards to climate change and things of that nature. So I don't know if he understands that it's going to affect his children and his grandchildren, or if he even cares other than the fact that it's about making a buck. But what I really wanted to say was, in regards to Michael Bloomberg, it's basically a power play on his part to go
all right,
after...
Before you go any further, explain who Michael Bloomberg is and why you're talking about him.
Oh, Michael Bloomberg is one of the richest men in America. He was also the former mayor of New York City, and that he's also the head of Bloomberg News, which is one of the biggest news organizations in the world. He's now talking about maybe running for president. To me, he has no real support. He has no real backing. He has no organization. The man just basically has nothing but his money. Was he a good mayor in New York City? No, I don't think he was a good mayor. I even will go too far as to say he don't like people of color, as far as I'm concerned. You know, it seems to me that he wants to place himself in a position to protect the interests of the millionaires and the billionaires, and to do whatever he can to fight against Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and their message. So he's just coming in to cause utter confusion. Now, what does that mean in regards to the Democratic Party? I couldn't tell you. I mean, I'm totally disgusted with the Democratic Party, because the thing that annoys me the most is that they have no cohesion, they have no message, they have no type of real platform, they have no vision, they have absolutely nothing to motivate and to get the people in this country to get rid of the person that's in office right now. You know, everybody talks about the black voters, the women and the males, and things of that nature. I have tried to, you know, indirectly speak to a number of these so-called TV pundits, the people that go on there and talk that talk and whatever they do. And, you know, like I've said to them in tweets and emails, y'all going to have to come together and put together some sort of program where y'all just go into a room and set forward what is going to be the direction that you're going to just basically give black people away to these people, and in the process get
some of these white people to understand how what's happening to all of these people are affecting you also. So, you know, because to me, there's no direction in regards to where we're going in this society as a collective. And I'm talking about blacks and whites. You know, there's no messaging and how we're going to fight against this guy.
I have to ask you this question. Why is it solely the responsibility of the Democratic Party to do that?
Because they're the opposition. They're the opposition to what's going on.
What percentage of the responsibility do the people have
for helping set the
direction of the party?
The people have all the responsibility, but the people don't have the intellect nor the intelligence to see what's going on and to.
I think you're making a sweeping indictment there when you said the people don't have the intelligence to do it.
I'm making a sweeping indictment because they need direction, Jay.
They need direction.
And that's why I'm saying.
And for too long, the Democratic Party, and it's not alone in this regard. The Republicans are the same. The Libertarians have the same problem. This is across the board. But I think it's resonating with you more so than with any other party, because there has been such a heavy investment by people of color in the Democratic Party. And here in this moment, we just are so upset that just when we need the Democratic Party to show some strength and discipline and organization, it's, you know, they're falling apart.
Hey, listen, Utrice, I agree with you. What I'm saying to you is, in all organization, there needs to be someone to step up and handle the business that's necessary to move it forward. You've shown that with the City Sun. You showed that with WBAI. Unfortunately, the people didn't listen to you, and now you see what happened years and years later. The bottom line is, the Democratic Party looks for black people to be the savior of the Democratic Party. So what I'm saying is, okay, it's time for the black people to set up and put forward the agenda. Because, see, the thing that made me so disappointed in the Democratic Party, to be honest with you, was the manner in which they treated Ellison from Minnesota. See, I always felt that he would have did a way better job than this clown Tom Perez is doing at this time. Now, I'm saying because Tom Perez isn't going to do anything to move us forward, I'm saying it's going to have to take these so-called blacks who get on the television and talk the talk to now collectively come together, close up shop, and set forward the agenda and move it forward and make white people go along with the agenda. Because, listen, we got the power and we got the hammer. Hey, you don't go along with what we're saying and what we're trying to put forward, then you're not going to be able to get the black vote. And until we make that type of honest decision and put forward that honest display of what our power really is, we're going to just have to deal with another 4 years of the madman in office. That's just a blatant fact to this matter. That's just blatant fact. We're going to have to stand up tall and make some demands and do what we have to do to move this party forward. Or if not, we're going to lose again. That's it.
All right. Well, thank you, sir, for calling in and contributing as forcefully as usual. Thank you so much. We'll take a short break and come back to your calls at 888-874-4888. It is Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories. We'll be right back. listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday. Let's hear you free your mind of whatever it is you haven't brought to our attention yet at 888-874-4888. Now, I don't know if you've been paying attention to some nonverbal cues and clues that we're getting from the president, but I suspect once he, you know, shrinks away from the public view, he's in deep trouble emotionally, psychologically. He's crumbling. And as he crumbles, he's getting more and more bitter. He's getting more and more unfocused. And he's getting more and more hateful, even of people in his own circle. I think we'll see some more of that as the days go on. Peter from New York, you're on the air.
Hey, Eutrice, this is Peter.
Hello.
Have you been reading about the NAFTA 2.0?
About the what?
The NAFTA 2.0 that Trump is trying to push through Congress. Of course, it has the Republican support and mostly Democratic opposition. But there is a provision in this particular bill. This is the U.S.-Canada-Mexico agreement that Trump put together. Well, this may be typical of many of the provisions, but it is a provision that protects Big Pharma. And it not only would protect their pricing policies here in the U.S., but it would also tie Mexico and Canada to the same pricing policies. So there is a group called Replace NAFTA, and they sent out a letter on this issue, and they suggested that Congress people call, or that people call their Congress people, especially if they're Democrats, and say, vote against this, and vote against the Big Pharma giveaway. And the congressman in my area, Brindisi, who's a new Democrat, just got into office, managed to replace a very conservative Republican. When he was campaigning, came across as sort of a progressive, and then later on, when he was actively campaigning, he came across as sort of a middle of the road kind of guy who knows how to get along with Republicans, knows how to talk across the aisle. Now that he's a brand new Democrat, he's volunteered to be the leader pushing this issue for the Blue Dog Democrats, advocating that that this provision stay in the bill, that it not be taken out. Therefore, the Big Pharma will be protected on their prices in the future. They'll have total control of the prices, and subsequent Congresses and so on won't be able to overturn this. And this is, I'm talking from upstate New York, this is Brindisi. But this is relevant for anyone who has a congressperson, most especially if they're a Democrat. They should be calling to say, vote against this particular provision.
Replace it with what?
Well, I'm looking here. NAFTA 2.0 says, this is a particular email I got, Congress must eliminate NAFTA 2.0 terms that lock in high drug prices. And it says the revised NAFTA deal that Donald Trump signed would lock in high U.S. medicine prices. Big Pharma rigged the rules. NAFTA 2.0 guarantees extended monopoly rights for pharmaceutical corporations to block generic competition. this would tie the hands of this and future Congresses to change the policies that lead to high drug prices. It also would export these bad policies to Mexico and Canada. So we call on Congress to ensure that Donald Trump removes this pharma giveaway from the revised NAFTA text before Congress begins consideration of the deal. So, in other words, remove that particular part of the NAFTA 2.0 agreement. And evidently, there are only about 11 or 12 blue dog Democrats that are advocating on the side of Trump on this issue. And but, you know, that may be enough to steer the vote the Republican way rather than Democratic way, you know, in Congress, sometimes, in the House.
Sometimes you can't help but believe, and they provide the ready evidence for it. Opposition is not really their tactics. Are so namby-pamby. We want you to do the right thing. We encourage you to do this. No, what is going to be the punishment if people don't do what you want them to do? They don't have any fear of people.
Yeah.
They're asking, well, please say no oppose this bill. That's not working in this day and age. It's nice that you're being polite and you're asking them to do the right thing, as if that's going to work. There's no hint even of what people are prepared to do if they decide not to implement what people want them to do.
Yes, the problem we have with this representative system, most especially in swing districts, and with a congressman like this who came across as a populist, you know, and who's raising a good some portion of his campaign funding from the citizens that he met with during the elections.
Mm-hmm.
He's actively emailing us and asking for contributions, but meanwhile, it looks like he's fronting for Big Pharma at this point.
Yeah, but what are people doing about it?
Yeah, right. Well, I've called his office.
Calling his office. My point is,
hey, that's
they
gonna be enough.
Understand.
Jeez, what else do you want?
They will not pay a price for bucking the people demanding that the bill reflect what they want, which is, I mean, I can't argue about what it is they want. It seems perfectly feasible, and we clearly understand why there's such strong support for this NAFTA bill. I'm saying our tactics are wrong.
Well,
we are so polite.
Polite, okay, but what? Do what instead of that?
You have to be aggressive. You have to embarrass these people all day, all night.
Yeah.
This is a campaign. And if you understand that you're fighting literally for your lives, you know, yours and other people's, you have to adopt different tactics. We're so mannerly.
Yeah.
I'm
going to be sending an email to his office and copying to everybody I know and basically point out this.
You know what? When you send an email, it is not nearly as powerful as people being present.
You have
to be physically present somewhere where you can be seen.
So go to one of his offices
and
sit
public.
In.
They can't take that.
Unfortunately, this is such a huge country, you know, and it takes It takes many, many hours of travel to get to D.C.
But at the same time, people get it that you are fighting for a group that is across the country itself.
Absolutely.
So then you have
That's why I called you, Utrice, to get it out nationwide. You're nationwide.
No, I'm saying, in general, we find this to be a major flaw in the way we respond to injustice. We're very polite. We're very patient. And at some point, we are going to have to send the message, time's up.
Yeah, but you're polite and patient, too. Are you going to lead a delegation to Washington, D.C.? Are we all going to join you in Washington, D.C. to sit in at their various...
No,
oh, that's another problem. We have
D.C., you organize where you are.
Yeah.
You organize where you are. And we have to realize that they're very comfortable ignoring people's demands. They're very comfortable with it because they expect nothing to happen to them. And
very
that's where
true.
We have to stage a surprise.
Yes.
This is a very vital issue.
Right.
I know people who literally budget money to go to Canada to get their medicines.
There you go.
This is a very serious matter. And they're making money. They could hire lawyers. They could influence legislators to do whatever it is they want to do. They have the upper hand. People have to fight with the tools that they have. And the one tool that you have is you could be right in their face all the time. Don't let up.
Right. Well, this is an opportunity. If I understand correctly, this bill has still not been passed in the House. So, we have a chance of holding this at bay and preventing it from going through the big pharma giveaway.
Yes. But we have to get aggressive,
right?
Very aggressive. And that means you're going to have to be prepared to step on a couple of toes, to part from the norm of politeness and whatnot. This is not about being polite. This is about helping people fight for their lives.
Absolutely.
And this is not a polite fight.
There is an article that David Dayan wrote October 31 for the American Prospect, and the headline of this article is "When Pharma Needs a Friend, Conservative House Democrats Move to Protect the Drug Company Profits." So there's a little background info on this issue.
I really wish, if it were possible, that we could have a major kind of a convention in which activists are apprised of the need to change up some of their tactics because the things are so serious. Trump, by nature, does not care about people. He's a super narcissist. He has no room for anybody else.
But so is Hillary. So is Hillary, I should say.
Oh, yeah, we know Hillary a long time. But the fact is that people have to be prepared to change up their tactics. Change up the tactics in order to get things done and to send a signal. You're fighting in your way for your profits. We're fighting in our way for our lives. There you go. Thanks so much, Peter, for your call. Well, we've come to the end of our program today. Thank you so much for participating and contributing. It's the weekend, and I encourage you to surround yourselves with people who bring positive dimension to your life. Contribute positively to your life and encourage you in one way or another to just persevere. Just persevere. We'll see each other Monday. Bye-bye.